When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the SoxProspects.com podcast, episode number 85. My name is Chris Hatfield, and coming to you here from Sox Prospects South / Mid-Atlantic here in our nation's capital. Today is the last day of the minor league regular season. Unfortunately, no Red Sox teams are advancing to the postseason, at least from this point. Of course, the Gulf Coast League Red Sox won the Gulf Coast League championship, but otherwise, with the Greenville Drive losing their season finale today, they narrowly missed a playoff spot. So no other postseason baseball. We're not doing our wrap-up show today. We're just going to go over some notes from the field, the September rankings, which we haven't had a chance to talk to you about yet, and a couple other notes, including Anderson Espinoza, the Arizona Fall League rosters. And as well, at the end of the episode, we'll have an interview that I did this past weekend in Potomac with Wendell Rijo. And I think that about covers what we'll be hitting today. Let me introduce the other fine gentleman on this podcast. First, our director of scouting and a regular on the podcast, Ian Kundle. Ian, how are you?
Good. How are we doing tonight, Chris?
Excellent. Excellent. And tonight, no Matt. Matt Hegel is unable to join us, but we are joined by our assistant director of scouting, Chaz Fiorino. Welcome back, Chaz.
Hey, how's it going?
Don't sound too excited, my man. Well, we're glad to have Chaz on and Ian on, as the three of us have actually, over the past weekend, caught a decent amount of baseball, so we're going to have plenty of notes from the field. Of course, as I say to you guys every episode, please, if you listen to the show, subscribe on iTunes or on Stitcher or one of those other podcast apps, and rate and review the show. It really does help to get those ratings on there and the reviews. We love the feedback. Spread the word. Tell a friend. If you have a friend who you know that likes the Red Sox, maybe isn't even necessarily into the minor leagues quite yet, but if they have a half-hour commute, they may want to listen to the show on, or at least half of the show on, or maybe a third of the show on most weeks, frankly. Tell them about it. Tell them to download it, throw it on their phone, on their iPod. Spread the word. We appreciate it. You can follow the website's account on Twitter, at Sox Prospects. You can follow me at SP Chris Hatfield. Ian, where can the people follow you?
At Ian Kundle, I-A-N-C-U-N-D-A-L-L.
And Chaz, how about you?
At CB Fiorino.
Excellent. And Fiorino is F-I-O-R-N-I-N-O, right?
Close enough.
Did I throw an extra N in there?
You got it wrong.
F-I-O-R-I-N-O. I don't know why I threw that other N in there. I apologize. I know how to spell your name. I was trying to do it off the top of my head.
That's that Brown and Virginia education at work right there.
Hey, you know, we didn't
take
spelling.
It's not a Michigan education.
We didn't take spelling. What can I tell you? Excellent. All right, well, let's jump right into it with some notes from the field, guys. I'll start with you. You both were in Lowell over the weekend and saw Pawtucket today. Let's start with Lowell. You saw a few of the guys who were called up from the Gulf Coast League. There were seven players who were called up from the Gulf Coast League, and you guys caught Travis Lakins, Logan Allen, and Yancori Pimentel. I guess let's start with Lakins, who was drafted as a draft-eligible sophomore out of the Ohio State University. And he started on Saturday, I believe. He was a sixth rounder who got $320,000 for his signing bonus. He got one inning in the Gulf Coast League. You guys saw him for two innings. What'd you think?
I can't believe you added the V in, by the way. That makes me so mad.
I'm sorry.
Continue.
I threw to you, actually. So
I didn't see him, so Chaz is continuing.
Oh, Chaz. Okay. What'd you think, Chaz? You seemed like you kind of liked him.
Yeah, so Lakins, he threw two innings, no hits, no runs, one walk, three Ks. He threw 27 pitches, 16 for strikes. He generated actually 7 swing and misses, 4 with his fastball, 3 with his changeup. It's pretty athletic build. He's really skinny. Definitely has some room for added strength. He had a pretty simple, easy, repeatable delivery, I thought. 3-quarter arm slot with a quick arm, and he stayed on line towards the plate and threw a lot of strikes. His fastball sat 91 to 93. Most of them were 92 to 93. And he had some occasional hard side run when he had it down in the zone, but he actually left a lot of fastballs up in the zone. I would have liked to have seen him locate it down a little bit better, which will be something for him to focus on going forward. Like the curveball, actually, he threw only 3 curveballs. They're at 75, 76, but they had some hard snap and tie rotation. It's one of the best curveballs I've seen in Lowell so far this year. And then he threw one curve. Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to jump in on the curveball. According to the TrackMan data, it was actually had the best spin rate of any breaking ball that a Lowell pitcher had thrown this year, and that includes Rick Porcello in his rehab outing. So, something interesting that the TrackMan kind of supported what you said about the curveball.
Yeah, definitely. His curveball immediately stood out when he in warmups. And then, like I said, he only threw 3 in his 2 innings. 2 of them showed 2 plain hard snap with tie rotation, and then he threw one that was at 70 miles an hour, but it was kind of flat and just kind of backed up on him. But he definitely flashed a plus curveball, which I thought was interesting. And then his changeup as well, I thought was a future plus offering. He threw 4 of them. I got 3 swing and misses on them. He located it really well down in the zone with late dive away from lefties. He doubled up on the changeup, and he was able to throw it for strikes. So, I mean, overall, it looked like he had 3 potential 60-grade pitches with his fastball, curveball, changeup. I don't know much about his history with Ohio State or anything. I think he was a draft-eligible sophomore, actually.
He was.
But I'd be interested to see how that stuff plays up over longer innings. But looked real good in Lowell on Saturday. Right now, he's listed at 6'1", 175. I saw another place where he was listed at 180. It's probably closer to the 175 range. Mm-hmm. So right now, just physically, probably profiles best as a reliever, but he's definitely skinny, definitely room for added strength. So he definitely has to put on some more strength to profile kind of in the back end of the starting rotation, but definitely an intriguing arm.
He actually threw 96 innings at Ohio State this year, so you can understand why they he averaged 6.4, whatever that is, so basically 6.1, and if you're going to round that to baseball numbers, innings per start. So you can tell why they're probably taking it a little easy with him with a 20-year-old arm getting basically, I think this put him just below 100 innings.
Yeah, and he just turned 21 at the end of June, actually.
Right. So, yeah, one would assume he'll go to the Fall Instructional League, and I would assume he's pretty much a shoe-in for Greenville next year, right, based on what you saw?
Yeah, I don't see why not. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. All right, well, let's move on to Logan Allen then. Allen also got more innings than Lakins did in the Gulf Coast League. He was drafted out of IMG Academy in Florida in the eighth round, got a $725,000 signing bonus, so something more equivalent to a third round bonus to sign. And he actually threw 20 innings in the Gulf Coast League, only allowed 12 hits, 1 walk, 24 strikeouts. So that's the kind of strikeout to walk ratio you like to see. UCI saw him on Sunday in Lowell, and I guess we'll start with Ian. What'd you think of Logan Allen? Living up to the hype from the numbers from the GCL?
Yeah, it wasn't so much he's only 18, obviously, so it didn't have, the stuff wasn't really stood out. I think it was just more, he had a very mature demeanor, and he throws strikes, and, you know, when you're facing Gulf Coast League hitters, if you can pound the strike zone and you have, you know, you're sitting in the low 90s, you're going to be pretty successful. Especially when you have a couple secondary pitches you can mix in. So he was, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really know what to expect because we'd never seen him before, but it was interesting. I think it's going to take some developmental time, but there's some projection there. His frame, he's listed at 6'3", 200, looks about right. So there's not a ton of projection in his body left. He's got a pretty strong lower half. but maybe he's only 18, so you never know. Maybe he'll grow a little more. So we'll see with that. But his fastball, he sat mostly in the 90 to 92 mile per hour range. Later in the outing, I think he was dropping down into the high 80s, but not too far. It was mostly, you know, maybe 88, 89 occasionally. And he complemented that with a curveball and a changeup. Curveball was in the mid 70s. I think 74 to 76 mainly. Is that what you have too, Chaz?
74, 78, yeah.
Or yeah, that's an 8 actually. You're right. I couldn't read it. But yeah, so 74, 78 on the curveball. It was long, 12 to 6 action. And then he also mixed in a changeup. Changeup was 78 to 80. And changeup had good arm speed, but he had a couple that he just didn't finish, kind of led it and floated to the plate. So kind of what you'd expect, you know, some good ones, some bad ones. So we'll see. But overall, I think it was just And the delivery was – I think delivery had a little bit of funk in it. He kind of does a little rock back right before he comes forward. And he's pretty straight up when he throws. But other than that, it looked – he seemed like didn't have a lot of trouble. He was able to repeat it. And, I mean, it's kind of one of these – I'm not sure how much projection there is in his fastball or if he's going to, you know, be adding velocity or improving there, because he's pretty much – He's not like he's a very skinny guy or anything. He's got a good size on him already. But pitching in the low 90s with maybe a couple potential average just slightly above odd secondary offerings from the left side, that's something that can play. So it was a good start. I'm interested to see where it goes, but it was hard, you know, four innings. Got to see him a few more times to have a better feel, I think. Chaz, you got anything to add?
Yeah, no, I think he's a pretty advanced, I'd say, left-handed kid out of high school.
I would agree.
Yeah, he's only 18. He's not going to be 19 until next April. He's got the big body, 6'3", 200. And like Ian was saying, he's got a three-pitch mix, the ability to spin a breaking ball, change up. So I think there's a lot to work with, given his frame. Already in the low 90s from the left side as a high school kid. So there's definitely a lot to work with there.
The comp we keep hearing for him physically and I think with his mechanics is John Lester. Would you guys say that that's apt or no?
I would probably agree with that, yeah. I think that's a lazy comp. I think you hear that a lot. Delivery-wise, he kind of looks like he's kind of got like a Lester delivery. Like he was saying, he's got the slight like back tilt in the delivery.
Yeah, Ian, do you agree with that or no? I know you wanted to throw something in there.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, I think he's about the same size as what Lester's listed at. And that, as Chaz mentioned, the delivery has some similar elements to it. But I do think it's kind of a lazy comp that it's just a high school left-handed pitcher who the Red Sox gave a decent amount of money to.
Yeah. So. And he's filled out, but he's like he's got that baby face.
Yeah.
And he's not – I wouldn't say he's like fat by any means, but it's like –
It's rock solid.
Right. It's weight that could turn into muscle.
Yeah, I noticed I said that it looked like his lower body was a lot more mature than his upper body. So I think it's something when he gets in the Red Sox weight program and as he physically matures, we could see some added upper body strength,
sure. Yeah.
Which for some pitchers is a good thing. In others, it isn't. So we'll see where that goes.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, I think he's a high school kid developmentally that's going to benefit a lot better getting straight into pro ball and like a major league player development staff out of high school rather than going to college for 3 years.
Definitely. And I think he's someone, too, who's advanced enough that we could see him in Greenville. We should see him, and he will be in Greenville next year.
That was the next question I was going to ask, actually. So
yeah, he's someone who, just maturity-wise, he's got good pitchability and feel for a high school kid that I wouldn't be scared. You know, he's going to start – if he starts in Greenville next year, he'll be starting as an 18-year-old, and that doesn't really concern me. He's someone who I feel like has the necessary stuff on field presence. We don't know a lot about him off the field or anything, but just on the field, he looks like someone who could handle that assignment.
Yeah, that could potentially be a pretty loaded rotation in Greenville next year because you're going to have Anderson Espinosa there most likely, potentially Jose Almonte, who had a pretty good year in Lowell, and then you've got guys like Lakins, Mark Brakeman, who got one inning in the Gulf Coast League this year, but he was a college guy out of Stanford. In fact, he was a senior, right? Or no, he was a junior. But yeah, I mean, you've got to assume if he's healthy, he goes to Greenville. Allen could go there. And then you've got the next, you know, is Carsten Whitson going to be healthy next year? It kind of, the list goes on of guys that could be in that rotation. So It'll be intriguing to see what the what those five are coming out of camp. Daniel Gonzalez probably piggybacks, although we have him pegged for the rotation in the current projections, which should probably change. Last guy we wanted to talk about is Yankori Pimentel, and of the three of these guys, he's the one that people probably know the least about. He's actually 21, but he was signed out of the Dominican Republic in what was his signing date? It was October of 2011 out of the Dominican. So he didn't sign at 16. At that point, he would have been 18, in fact. And he's, believe it or not, Rule 5 eligible this year. He spent 2 years in the Dominican Summer League, spent 2 years in the Gulf Coast League last year and this year before getting a one-game shot at Lowell. That said, we have heard good things about him. What did you guys see?
I liked Pimentel a lot, and I actually liked him going back. We saw him in spring, and he stood out. His fastball was 93, 94, and he had some glove side cut in on right-handers. And he had a slider 84, 85 that I thought had some late tilt and was pretty tight and short, and he was able to throw it for strikes. So he was a guy I kind of starred that I wanted to follow going forward. And then in Lowell today, or Sunday, he was actually up to 96. He was 93 to 96 with the fastball. He had that tight short slider, which was actually up a tick as well at 87 to 88. And he throws strikes, and it's pretty easy arm strength. He's going to be 22 at the end of this year. I think you said it, Chris. He's Rule 5 eligible this year. 6'2", 210, pretty good pitcher's frame. But it's an interesting two-pitch mix, plus fastball. I thought it was a plus slider. And he throws strikes, so there was a lot to like with him.
Interesting, yeah. It's strange to me why on earth he repeated the Gulf Coast League, because his numbers last year were very good. But I'm sure there's some reason, and I almost wonder if they'll skip him right to Greenville next year, especially with the more aggressive approach we saw the team starting to take this year with bullpen arms. Add to the fact that Dave Dombrowski, the incoming president of baseball operations, tends to take a more aggressive approach in the minors too, in terms of promotions, than the Red Sox had. Although it's not like the Red Sox weren't aggressive, you got to think he probably starts in Greenville next year and gets a shot to maybe even be in Portland by season's end, right, if things are going well.
I mean, they kind of don't have a choice, right? Because he's not going to get selected in the Rule 5 draft this year, I don't think, unless some scout saw that outing and just was really impressed. But they got to kind of fast track him at some point, and he's not a star. They're not developing as a starter, as they shouldn't be, because he's a two-pitch guy. So if you're working in the bullpen, I think we kind of saw it was Williams Jerez this year starting in Greenville, right?
Yes. He made it up to Portland. Yeah. Aroh started in Salem, I think, and got. Aroh was in Greenville to start last year and was in the majors this year.
Yeah. So, but I kind of just look at it. With Jerez and Aroh, there's kind of two examples of guys who were maybe later developing, either because they signed late or because they were position players who couldn't hit. That later developing guys who, once they got into the bullpen, got kind of fast tracked a little bit. So we could see that with Pimentel. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. But that's another bullpen arm to watch, and it certainly seems like they're starting to get a few of those guys. Plus, it seems like the type of guy that Dombrowski's going to like, because he throws, well, maybe not, high 90s, but he's got some velo there.
That was actually something Chaz and I were talking about yesterday. It doesn't seem like, when we see someone like Pimentel come in, it's kind of surprising, because the Red Sox as a whole don't have a lot of bullpen arms who throw that hard.
Nope.
So, as you said, Dombrowski likes his hard throwers, so we could be seeing a little bit of a shift in that, with more guys who are, more of the fastball, the two-pitch guys who just throw pep big fastballs, rather than, it seems like they prefer guys who are maybe throw, three or four pitches and have some projection to maybe add velocity, but not necessarily have present velocity. So.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, because in the system, and I'll just, the two bullpen guys that I was going to briefly mention when we talked about Salem were German Tavares and Chandler Shepherd. And it seems like they throw hard for the system, but they're, 93, 94 for Tavares, maybe 90, he hit 95, although it seems harder than it is. And Shepherd was 93 to 95 as well. So, yeah, in the system that's hard, but in the game of baseball right now, that's not really hard for a bullpen arm.
No, when you see the Mets running out like three guys to close the game, who are all sitting 97, 99. Yeah.
Hitting triple digits.
Splitter at 95, Jarius Familia.
Right.
Absurd.
Let's move up to Pawtucket, unless you guys have anybody else you wanted to mention that you saw in Lowell that caught your eye. But we've certainly talked a lot about you know, the Lowell lineup and the guys down there. You guys saw a really good game out of Marco Hernandez today, and I was wondering about that. What do you have on Marco Hernandez? Because he's a guy who, you know, just to give the background here, he was the player to be named later that the Red Sox got for Felix DeBrandt from the Chicago Cubs this past December. And he went into Portland, got hurt early in the year, but he wound up just when he came back from injury, blowing through Portland, hit 326, 349, 482 with 5 home runs in 68 games. And that was a lot more power. That 482 slugging percentage was higher than a great deal higher than any slugging percentage he'd had since being in the Arizona League, which is the other rookie complex league in the minors. A breakout year for him, and I guess we hadn't really seen a whole lot of him. So what did you guys think of him offensively? And we ended up seeing him play a little bit of shortstop with Dev Marrero in Boston.
He, defensively, I'll just say he actually didn't – I don't remember him making a single play the entire game except for one. There was
a short
pop. Yeah, he didn't do anything. It was really – it was unfortunate because the only other time – I've seen him play two other times this year, and one time he didn't play the field. And the other time, he made 3 errors in 2 games at a doubleheader and got yanked midway through the second game.
All right.
So,
which is not his reputation, obviously. He's not.
Yeah, he didn't look good in that game, I'll say that.
Right.
But
right.
It was just one game, so I didn't really make that much note of it. So, it's something defensively I need to see more. But at the plate, he was very impressive. He went 4-for-5 today with 2 singles, a double, and a home run. And the out was a very hard hit line drive just right at the first baseman. His first 2 hits actually came off Marcus Stroman, the rehabbing big leaguer. And I would say that of the Pawtucket hitters, they were getting some good swings against Stroman, but I just like the at-bats he put together. He when he was facing an actual legit big league arm. His first at-bat, he came up, he got a fastball at 93 away, and he just stayed back on it and just used his hands, hit a nice line drive to left field. You know, didn't really try to do too much, didn't try to pull the ball, just, you know, let the ball get deep and just throw your hands at the ball. So that was a really nice piece of hitting. His next at-bat, he did pretty much the exact same thing. And he got ahead in the count 3-1. I liked how he tracked the ball. He was really watching into the glove. After every pitch, kind of taking a second to think about the pitch, which was nice to see. And this one, he's up 3-1 and did the same, a short, simple inside-out swing on a fastball down to line it to left field. Same kind of thing, just wasn't trying to pull the ball, didn't try to hit a home run or anything, just stayed back and just, you know, let his hands do the work. Then I think this fourth at-bat was the one where he hit a home run. He got a fastball, belt high. It was middle in. It was pretty much a batting practice pitch from a side-arming righty, so he got a really good look at it as a left-handed hitter. But he did what he needed to. I mean, he cleared his hips out, and he has a little bit of loft on his swing and nice high finish, and he just drove the ball on pretty much a line drive out to right field. So that was a very nice swing. And then his final at-bat, he went back to left field and just stayed back on another fastball and just slammed it right down the left field line. This one was noteworthy, though, because it was against a left-handed pitcher, and he really hung in there well. With some guys, even in Pawtucket, you see them, they really bail out with their front side against lefties, and he didn't do that at all. He looked pretty comfortable at the plate against them. I didn't look up to see if he had any noticeable platoon splits this year, but actually that'd be something I'd be interested to see. But it was a really good swing against a lefty, and just overall, it was just a very impressive day at the plate.
Yeah, our Nick Robasco actually saw him in Allentown against Lehigh Valley recently, and the main takeaway he came away with was that he was extremely aggressive. Swung at the first pitch twice in 5 at-bats, swung at back-to-back pitches after the count was 1-0, swung at a 2-0 pitch. Does that square with what you saw, I guess?
I mean, I have it that he was I don't have every pitch written down, but a couple of the at-bats I do have notes on that he attacked the first pitch, but I do remember him taking a fair number of pitches also and working pretty deep counts in a few at-bats. So I think, though, that if you look, doesn't walk a lot. I think he has like 18 walks on the season.
Gotcha.
So, or 17. So it could be one of those, you know, he does have a lot of strikeouts too, but it could be one of those, you know, just aggressive to the there's kind of two different types of aggressiveness. There's aggressiveness where you have no idea what you're doing, and there's aggressiveness where you just like to hit the ball. So I think he could maybe fall in the latter camp where, you know, if he gets a pitch to hit, he's going to swing at it versus someone who, you know, just has no idea what they're doing at the plate.
Right, right. Okay, and I guess on the mound we should talk about – I know we've gotten some questions about William Cuevas, who is a guy that's been in the system for a while. He's actually a minor league free agent this offseason, is Cuevas, and he started the game today, spent most of the year in Portland, and in fact was their pitcher of the year. And he's up in Pawtucket now, obviously, was signed out of Venezuela in July of 2008, spent 2.5 seasons, or I guess 2 full seasons in the Dominican Summer League. The next year he had three appearances in the Dominican before coming up to the Gulf Coast League, and has basically gone, interesting projection, he was in Lowell in 2012, skipped Greenville, spent 2 seasons in Salem before going to Portland this year and making it up to Pawtucket. Anything there, guys? Anything that is worth keeping an eye on? Chaz, how about, what was your take on Cuevas?
Yeah, so that was my first time seeing Cuevas, and he was actually he wasn't bad. He was pretty good. 3-pitch mix: fastball, changeup, curveball. Fastball was 88-91. He actually had 7 swing and misses with the fastball. Threw strikes with it. It was more. He had more of a two seamer, 85-87. Change up was 78-81. He threw it with some pretty good arm speed. He doubled up on it a couple times. And then the curveball was 75-78. He threw it to both righties and backdoor to lefties. It was a little bit slurvy. Below average grade pitch overall, I thought, but he went to it a lot. He threw it with confidence. The change up I thought was the better of his 2 off speed pitches, which I graded as an average grade pitch. It was pretty good three average grade pitch mix overall, I'd say, going forward. No really plus pitch, but he threw strikes and just seemed like a pretty solid depth arm at AAA.
Interesting. It seems like, is he a guy that you think they, I mean, I'm sure they might try to bring him back. There's no reason to necessarily just let him go, but you know, is he the type of guy you see them maybe going out of their way to make sure they try and get back, or, you know, is he the type of guy that they've got a dime a dozen in the system right now?
I don't know if he's a dime a dozen, but what is he? He's going to be 25 in October.
Yep.
He's going to be 25 in October. Yeah. I mean, he seems like a guy going forward who could give you a spot start in the big leagues if you needed to. Fastball, like I said, was 88, topped at 91, most were 88-90. So you'd like to see a little bit more tick on the fastball. Didn't have that much movement, but he did have some, like I said, two-seam action at 85-87. But yeah, he's a guy I'd want to stick around and keep in AAA if you're able to.
Yeah, and I think he's one of those guys that it's not someone you kind of, oh, maybe they put him in the bullpen and there's something there, because he's not a big guy. I think he's listed at 6'200" on the Pawtucket roster. So it's not, and it's not, as Chaz said, the stuff isn't great. So I think as like a, as he said, an org depth arm, you know, you can definitely do worse. And we've seen, I mean, some of the, they've had a lot of trouble finding those type of arms this year. I think they've had to go out and sign multiple guys just off waiver or off the, you know, the free agents to come in and pitch. So as in that role, I think he can, as potentially maybe get a spot start or two. It definitely is very intriguing in that, but I don't think there's a lot of anything much on top of that.
Interesting. Interesting. And we actually should mention, it just reported an hour ago that Rich Hill is among the guys that the Red Sox are going to add to the Major League roster now. I'm trying to, like, they also recall Jonathan Aroh, obviously, and Matt Barnes isn't getting called up, but he's going to go up to Boston for to get looked at after pitching today, which this is what in the business we call a transition. You also saw Matt Barnes throw an inning today, guys. Was there... Did he look healthy, first of all, because he's been battling some elbow tightness, apparently? You know, at this point, is he a starter or a reliever? Because there still seems to be some question about it. Ian, why don't you start?
Stuff wise, he looked pretty much the same as I've seen it in the past. Fastball was 90-94, mostly 90-92. But as he kind of got loose a little later in the inning was when he started pumping this to 93-94. But it's the same issue. It's very straight. Hitters get a really long look at it because he brings the ball behind his body and shows it there, and then they can follow it all the way up till his pointer, he releases it. So there's not a lot of deception there. So if he's not locating the fastball, he can get in a lot of trouble, as we saw at the big league level this year. And then he also his changeup actually looked pretty good. It was a little slower than we've seen in the past. So it was 81-82. Versus other times we've seen it, it's been more 83-86. So that was interesting. But he threw a couple good ones. I think he doubled up on it at one point. He got one strikeout on it with it showing some late drop, and he threw it with pretty good arm speed. But he also threw one really bad one that held too long, and he just spiked it into the dirt. I think the most interesting thing was he threw what looked like a cutter at 84-86. And I don't think it was a changeup because it was clear the changeup was pretty clear when it was 81-82, and this didn't look like it. That's about the velo range we have in his changeup in the past, but it was on the firm side and didn't really have a lot of movement, so I'm not really sure what to make of that. But other than that, I mean, he looked like the same guy, and I think he's a reliever. I think the upside is there for maybe a seventh inning arm, but if
seventh inning upside,
maybe eighth inning upside at most. I just don't. The issue is the fastball is not. I don't think he's going to miss enough bats with this fastball, and I don't think his command and control is good enough to make up for that. So, you know, if you're looking at someone with a fastball that plays down because hitters get a really long look at it and not great command and control, then even if you aren't pitching in the low to mid 90s with a decent secondary with a good decent changeup, I'm not really sure, you know, what that is. So, for me, yeah, there's not a lot's changed, I guess.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Chaz? You think the same?
Yeah, he's a reliever. Excuse me, he's a reliever all the way for me. Threw one inning today, 18 pitches, 11 strikes. He's coming off of that shoulder injury, but like Ian said, the fastball, it's just straight, way too straight. The secondaries are way too inconsistent. For me, I've always actually liked the curveball better, but that really hasn't. That's kind of taken a step back. Changeup hasn't really improved too much. So unless he's able to improve one of his secondaries or improve the command and control of his fastball, he's going to really struggle to reach his ceiling. But I think he's a potential reliever all the way down the road.
All right. Well, we'll see what they decide to do with him next year. Especially, you know, given the tight elbow thing this year, you wonder if it's...
Was it an elbow or is it a shoulder?
It was an elbow. I'm almost positive.
And I misspoke. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it was elbow tightness, but like you said, he pitched today, and Peter Abraham's piece on the call-ups said that he's going up to Boston to get looked at medically, but it's likely that he's also added to the roster. So one would assume pitching out of the bullpen rather than throwing him back in the rotation as much as they want to have that six-man rotation right now, apparently. I guess I'll quickly go next, and I'll just ramble unless you guys have questions on any of the guys I'm about to talk about, but... caught the Salem Red Sox for a couple of games in Potomac this past weekend, and not a ton to write home about. It's not, you know, the Greenville roster by any stretch, but caught Ty Buttrey for the second time this season on Saturday, and it was really more of the same. His curveball definitely looked a little bit better, but, you know, in the first inning he went out, got through the inning on 9 pitches, got the 3 batters. Actually, he got a fly ball, allowed a single, and then got a ground ball for a double play to get out of the inning. But then in the second inning, once he kind of seemed to maybe lose his mechanics a little bit, started letting the ball up arm side. You know, he actually had hit by pitch later in the game on a ball that just got away from him. High arm side, was right-handed hitter. And when he loses his mechanics and the ball starts floating on him like that, he starts trying to over-adjust and then starts yanking the ball low and away. And just kind of starts losing his, you know, his mechanics and his command and control of his fastball and his other pitches. The fastball was, you know, 91-93 for the most part, most of the game. Later, there were a few in the high, like 889. Didn't get velocities for every single pitch, unfortunately. Through that, the curveball and the changeup really were the ones that I noticed. Allowed a home run on a fastball in the fourth that was a shot off of the right field foul pole, but he allowed a lot of loud contact, a double, a triple, just looking really quickly here. You know, just kind of struggled a little bit, labored through five innings. He had 46 strikes on 73 pitches, but if you take out that first inning, it's 38 strikes on 64 pitches, which is not the ratio you want to have. So definitely still a work in progress with him. All the tools are there. It's just a matter of him being able to settle down when he gets into trouble a little bit and keep his mechanics and not have the ball start floating on him high arm side. On Sunday, I saw Teddy Stankiewicz start, and this is my first time seeing him. Actually, I don't think I ever saw him even in Lowell. So this might have been my first time seeing him, but it's a four-pitch mix. You know, fastball was 90 to 94 through the curveball. Has kind of a, maybe not quite 11 to 5, but it's not a 12 to 6 break. That was about 79. I think I got a couple. I saw a couple at 78. There was the slider and the changeup, both in kind of the low to mid 90s. Also, he'll work the changeup to lefties and the curveball to righties, and he works the slider to both. The slider actually is pretty good, quick, kind of quick slant to the away from a right-handed hitter. He's also super, very athletic. He had a very good pickoff move to first base, and in fact, he got one guy on a pickoff at first base. It's a very quick move. You could tell he's a guy. He when we talked to him earlier in the season, and that interview's on a past episode of the podcast. He talked about how he had played some other sports growing up, and you could tell he's definitely got some of that athleticism and some quick feet. I charted him at 55 strikes on 80 pitches. He did kind of get into a little bit of trouble in the second inning, but he did what Butcher really couldn't do. After he got into a little bit of trouble that inning, he was able to kind of right the ship, and he faced three batters each of the next five innings to get through seven innings. So, you know, really impressive recovery on his part to get through seven frames, which is not something that you necessarily will see a guy doing unless it's later in the year like it was. I think they just kind of let him take that seventh inning because it was his last start of the year. Liked what I saw out of him. It's definitely not a huge ceiling. I don't know that there was really a pitch there that stood out as being plus necessarily. I don't know what we have had them graded at. And like I always kind of say, I'm not a scout. So, you know, but it seemed like four, you know, solid, to maybe average potential, solid average potential on the four pitches. Nice pitch mix, good pitchability, good head on his shoulders on the mound. At the plate, the two guys that always stand out in this lineup are Wendell Rio and Mauricio Dubon. Dubon still looks a little bit to me like he's overmatched at the level, like I said last time, so I won't really go into it too much. But when he faces velocity, you'll start seeing him bail out a little bit with his back foot when he's swinging, kind of like he's just kind of diving at the pitch. Still goes up there sometimes, and you look at him, look at the first couple of pitches, like he's not going to swing at the first two pitches unless he gets a strike the first two or three pitches. So, you know, it's a little bit more of a it's not a stupid approach, but it's also not a complete approach yet. He's got some work to do on that. Defensively, honestly, I think he's good at shortstop. He doesn't strike me as plus there. The arm didn't really impress me this time, honestly. It's a good arm. It's, you know, it's probably a 50 arm from shortstop, but it's not one. He doesn't have the Javier Guerra cannon by any stretch of the imagination. You know, it does strike me as kind of a utility player profile where if you could teach him to play second, third, and short. He already plays shortstop at second, but maybe get him a little bit of a time at third base. He'd be pretty good there. And Wendell Rijo, I think, is by far the best bat in that lineup. Looked pretty good at the plate. Like I mentioned, I think last time, he's done a lot of work, and actually you'll hear him talk about this in my interview with him. Has done a lot of work in trying to close to the pitcher in his setup, in his stance. He used to be very open. He's now a little bit more closed because he takes that really big leg kick into his swing. You know, he had a couple of pretty good at-bats. Didn't do a whole lot, but honestly, at this point of the season, guys are really kind of wearing down. But, you know, the best hit I saw him have was on Sunday. He stung one up the middle for a single. And actually, in the ninth inning, on Saturday. He had a shot, an infield single, actually. That's not the one I'm thinking of. I thought he struck one pretty well to right field, but maybe I'm thinking of a different at bat from someone else in that game. But, you know, he definitely is pretty good up there. He's got, I would say, probably he's got very good speed. I don't know if I would necessarily throw. Do we have that as plus speed? I'm trying to think. Let me look. Yeah, we have him as plus speed, and I'd agree with it. He definitely, especially when he's going from first to third, when he can dial up that second gear, he really can get motoring. He's definitely completely healthy from his torn ACL before he signed at this point. And in the field, he's actually done a lot of work on doing a lot better on the routine plays, because those are the ones that really kind of have eaten him up in the past. He's got the tools to make really good plays, but sometimes on the easy ones, he just kind of gets too flashy for his own good. But he strikes me as having the tools to be a plus defensive second baseman. And actually, he's played a handful of shortstop recently. He's played four games at shortstop since July. So, you know, maybe as an emergency situation type guy there, he could do that. But, you know, he as you'll hear him say, he takes pride in his defense at second base now. That's his position, and he enjoys playing it. So, I like the package there, honestly. To me, where Rio might have been, Rio was definitely the guy I liked the best all weekend. And I'll just mention quickly, more of the save for Jordan Procession, plus defensive catcher. He's got a great arm. Should have had three caught stealing this weekend, but the base umpire just absolutely blew one call. None of us were quite sure what he was looking at in the stands. And he did successfully throw a couple other guys out. And I should mention a guy that Wendell Rio is going to mention briefly. Franklin Guzman has by far the most power on that team. Maybe Mario Martinez might be close to him, but Guzman had one home run that went off the scoreboard in Potomac, which is an absolute shot. And apparently he had a couple of bombs on Friday night that I missed because I didn't go to that game. And he actually is among the team leaders in Salem in home runs, even though he's been on the Phantom DL most of the season. I'll bring this up real quick. He had eight home runs on the year, and of guys that are and actually led Salem in home runs for the year with eight home runs, even though he only had 151 at bats. So definitely kind of impressive from him. Some power, but the problem is he just has no idea what he's doing at the plate. The plate approach is not there. He looked pretty terrible in some other at-bats over the course of the weekend. So that's pretty much what I have to report from Salem. I don't know if there was anybody in particular that you guys were wondering about, but otherwise I think we can move on. All right, so let's move on. Anderson Espinoza, we should probably mention, got a start for the Greenville Drive this past Saturday. This is noteworthy because Espinoza is 17, 13 months younger than anybody else in the league right now. And he actually held up pretty well. He definitely didn't dominate the way he had been in the Gulf Coast League. 3 1/3, 4 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 4 strikeouts. But those in attendance, which included Kylie McDaniel, who's been on the podcast before, came away very impressed by him. It makes sense that they would call him up to get another start, but interesting that it was Greenville instead of Lowell. Certainly going there next year if he's healthy, guys. Anything to make from this, or just kind of a nice chance to see probably the system's top pitching prospect one more time before we go into the offseason? Ian, I know we've talked about him a little bit.
I just think that they know he's too advanced for Lowell, so there's no point. There's no point in sending him there because he wasn't going to be challenged by Lowell hitters. So they decided to bump him to Greenville and give him a taste of where he's going to be next year, most likely, unless they send him to Salem. They won't
doing that.
They won't, but
to start the year,
from everything we've heard, it wouldn't be that much of a stretch. I'm laughing when I say that because I shouldn't be saying that about a 17-year-old, but it's true. Everything we've heard is he's just very advanced for his age. The stuff is presently there. I mean, it's potential for 3+ the better pitches. Just it's absurd. So I think they just said there's no point in sending him to Lowell. He's too good for this level, so let's give him a challenge. And I think he held his own for a 17-year-old in Greenville.
Yeah. Chaz, anything? I don't know if either of you guys have really heard anything, but do you have any reaction to Espinoza this year? I know we haven't really had you on since the Espinoza phenomenon has started.
No, yeah, there's actually, I saw there's a number of, I think some people posted like a video of his entire outing on YouTube, and I haven't had a chance to look at it, but yeah, there's some a lot of good video of him, and especially from his last outing online, that I've been meaning to take a look at. But
we're living in the future. Living in the future, yeah, definitely look. I haven't had a chance to check that out yet either, but definitely gotta get on that. I've got a. I might try and find a way to. Well, maybe not download it, but queue it up for the airport. I'm traveling this week for work. Yeah, so that, I mean, that's really all there is to say about Espinoza. He'll start there next year. It'll be interesting to see where he falls in the season-ending rankings. But it's just really right now. Well, we'll talk about the rankings in a second, but it's going to be hard for me to jump him ahead of the guys ahead of him right now. We should also briefly mention that the Arizona Fall League rosters were announced. Announced so far from the Red Sox, six of what will be eight guys from the system who will be playing for the surprise Saguaros. What's a Saguaro, by the way? Do we know? Anyway.
Isn't it Saguaro?
Saguaro, whatever. Well, but it's A-R-O.
It's a type of like cactus.
Oh, okay.
But it's... Yeah. I think all it's right. Saguaro.
Cactus facts.
Yeah. I only know that
because... An arborescent cactus species.
Right.
I only know that because I've been to Arizona, so... and I just remember that...
The top prospect going... He's definitely not a pitcher. Is first baseman Sam Travis. He'll be joined by Carlos Asuaje at second base, shortstop Su-Wei Lin, pitchers Chandler Shepard, Kyle Martin, and Aaron Wilkerson. Wilkerson being a starter, the other two being relievers. All of those players except for Shepard are in Portland. Shepard is in Salem, as I mentioned. And also the Red Sox are going to add two more. One of them is an infielder. I want to say the other is a pitcher because they usually have 4 and 4. We've speculated a little on who might be going as far as infielders. I think Travis Whitty might make a lot of sense if he's healthy. There are some other players.
Jansen?
Jansen Whitty. What did I call him?
Travis.
Travis Whitty. Why did I call him Travis? Anyway, Jansen Whitty. I think I was thinking of Travis Lakens for some reason. Yes, Jansen Whitty, perhaps if he's healthy, might be a guy. But I'm trying to think of who else they might send that's an infielder.
Greg Nani, maybe?
Yeah, maybe Greg Nani. If he's healthy, he ended the season on the DL as well. So any number of guys really could go. And then as far as pitchers, I mean, Williams Jerez seemed like a guy that they might send, but I don't know if he might be at an innings limit or not. So they might just be kind of evaluating where guys are at in terms of their arms at this point of the year. Yeah, really not a whole lot of response there. Do you guys have anything to mention there? It really wasn't a surprising year. I think I was able to peg four of the six before they were announced. Not a lot of surprise here, right?
No, I got nothing.
Yeah, no, there's nothing really to mention other than mentioning it. All right, so the last thing we should hit on before we get to our interview is the rankings. The new rankings came out on last week on September the 1st. Actually, I think they might have been out on August 31st. But I guess the biggest news, and we'll start right at the top, is we flip-flopped our number one and number two prospects. Yoan Moncada, the second baseman in Greenville from out of Cuba, taking the top spot with third baseman Rafael Devers, the Dominican 18-year-old, dropping one spot. To me, it's funny. Going into the July rankings, I wanted to put Moncada one, but I think I put Devers one because we had kind of talked about it. It was like, you know what, I think we all kind of wanted to have a consensus here. But going into this month, it seemed like Moncada was going up at the end of the year, which is what you like to see out of a guy. Even though he maybe got a late start in Greenville, he's only gotten better as the season has gone on. He's got some crazy number of stolen bases at this point. He's got 48 on the year, and I think he's probably got about 30 in the past month or something stupid.
It's like 45 of them or something are in the second half of the year.
Yeah, it's nuts.
And the second half isn't a true second half because the second half is like 2/3 of the way through the year. So
Yeah. I mean, and we've seen a lot of good stuff out of him. To me, it's potential for just being the toolsier of the two players, even though Devers is going to be projects to be a potentially very good hitter. What were your guys' thoughts? I'll start with Ian just because, Ian, you were one of the other ones voting on the rankings. And what your thoughts were on flipping those two, and then I want to get Chaz's thoughts as well.
Well, I'll say I had Devers originally because I just, as a general rule, I try to keep some consistency, and I still, nothing had really changed with Devers, so I didn't see a reason to drop him. But after consulting with Chaz, who's also on the podcast, I did ultimately flip them and went with Moncada. And I think part of it just Moncada up the middle, and the tools are just a little bit – there's more of them. He's got the five tools versus, you know, Devers, speed's not a part of his game. And so I don't really look at it either as like a 1-2. I think it's more like a 1A, 1B thing.
Right, agreed.
But it just – Moncada just – it, the tools are translating on the field. The power is going to come. And if he's starting to put it together and he's looking like, you know, as he's getting the game action, it's translating quicker than I expected. And if he continues this, his timeline is also a little sooner. I think he's going to move a little quicker than Devers will. So just, you know, a couple just small factors just push them ahead. But it's very close for me.
Jazz, what did you do to be the devil on Ian's shoulder?
I would have always had Moncada one. Like Ian was saying, he's up the middle. He's got power. He's got speed. He's a switch hitter. Projects to hit from both sides and with power. So I don't know how often you're going to find a switch hitting guy at shortstop with power and speed, especially.
You mean second base, right?
Second base, sorry. Up the middle. Power, speed, switch hitting. He probably could play shortstop. I like him better at second base. And that's probably where he profiles best at going forward. But, yeah, I mean, that's the selling point for me. Devers, I mean, the bat's legit. The power is legit. But, I mean, it's easier to – I mean, granted, it's probably a low risk. I mean, bat with Devers, I mean, the guy's going to hit. He's going to hit for power. But you know what? You can – that it's a lot easier around the league. Not convinced he's going to stick at third necessarily. He might end up moving to first. I know some people think he can play third. I actually haven't seen him enough, particularly defensively, but given his size. And actually, you know what? He actually looked a lot more in shape than what I've seen from him, from what I thought I saw him in spring and some video I've seen of him in the past. He looked more in shape, but who knows? He could move over to first, but he's a corner guy for sure. So, I mean, just given Moncada up the middle, power, speed, switch hitting, and the investment they have in him, he's number one for me all the way.
I actually pulled up since the South Atlantic League All-Star break. So they came back on June the 25th. Moncada in 55 games is hitting .311, .418, .505 with 45 stolen bases in 55 games. 34 walks to 54 strikeouts, 7 home runs in 55 games. Just not a lot he isn't doing at this point, frankly.
Yeah, I'd be curious. You guys saw Devers this year, right? Like, how did he look defensively?
Great. Yeah, we talked about it on a past episode of the podcast. He looked real good.
Yeah, okay. he was good at third base. He looked a lot more agile. And I had the same concerns as you coming out of spring training. But he definitely went away towards alleviating some of those concerns. I still think he's going to have to watch his body because he's, as you've seen him, he's not one of those guys who's really, you know, cut up and toned like Moncada, for example. He's more of got that, you know, softer, young, like immature body. So he's going to have to watch where that goes because he could, you know, if that gets away from him, he might not be able to play third base just in terms of, you know, his side-to-side movement and everything. But he looked a lot better when we saw him this year.
Yeah, plus arm too.
The arm was good. It was. He was able to make that throw. You know, the deep behind the third base bag with a little bit of zip on it. So that was good to see.
Looking elsewhere in the rankings, we kept Manuel Margot at number 3, and at this point, he's basically almost kind of boring. He's there. That's where he fits.
He's going to get traded this offseason.
There's a strong chance. Although the thing is, the reason I could see him not getting traded is there isn't a whole lot of outfield depth beyond Betts, Bradley, Castillo, which everyone's raving about. There's nothing in AAA, really. I don't think you can rely on Bryce Brents at this point. Chikini is what he is. I could see them maybe wanting to hold on to him for some depth just in case, but... That said, he is probably their top trade chip this offseason.
Yeah, I think if that's the reasoning, I think that's kind of a misappropriation of assets. I'd rather go out and sign, you know, you can go find guys who can be fourth, fifth bench outfielders on the free agent market.
Alejandro Deaza.
Or you can trade middle relievers for them.
Right.
So yeah, I think that he's kind of repetitive with what they have, and is he, I think he's a very good prospect, but I think they could get a lot for him. So I think he'd be someone who I'd be looking to move if they're looking to make a move for a top the rotation arm.
And then there was a little bit of shakeup in the rankings from 4 to 8. The faller from the top of that list to the bottom was Brian Johnson. That's because of the ulnar nerve irritation that he has that basically has ended his season. Although I guess they're saying he might pitch in instructs, I believe. Don't quote me on that. That could be very wrong. I'll double check that, and if it's wrong, I'll take it out. But moving up to number 4 was Henry Owens, who at that point had a very good start to his major league career. And has, you know, looked pretty good in the second half in general. Behind him, we jumped Anderson Espinosa up from 7 to 5, Andrew Benintendi up from 8 to 6, Javier Guerra, I wouldn't say moved down from 6 to 7, it was just kind of like he stayed where he was, and Espinosa and Benintendi really kind of have been making a leap here in the second half, and it's going to be interesting to see how they fall. I'm assuming Henry Owens is going to graduate by the end of the year, but, you know, ranking Espinosa and Benintendi relative to Margot is going to be somewhat challenging, I think. But we'll see. And then just mentioned rounding out the top 10, we kept Michael Kopech, who's, of course, suspended. Although I guess actually technically he's no longer suspended. Today would have been the last day of his suspension. And Sam Travis, who we just mentioned is going to the Arizona Fall League, first baseman from Portland, comes in at number 10. As far as the top 10 goes, like I said, we had a little bit of a mix-up of those guys in the middle there. How do you see those guys like Espinosa and Benintendi, the kind of newer guys to the system, how do you rank them in terms of the guys who've maybe been around a little bit or maybe are on the younger side of the scale with Garrett? It seems like it's a diverse portfolio of sorts. Ian, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I had Garrett ahead of the other two still in my personal rankings because – it was basically because he plays shortstop. That was the only reason, actually. With Benintendi, we saw a lot of him in Lowell this year, and he's done nothing but hit since he's got to Greenville. But it's a combination of, I think that's what he's supposed to do. You know, we're talking about a guy who was the number 7 pick in the draft. He was seen as one of the premium college bats, very mature approach. He can hit for average. I think he's going to hit for a little bit of power, which I still don't understand how because he's 5'8" maybe. But he just has really strong wrists and just hits. And it's just one of those things that while Benintendi, he does all that stuff well, Guerra has the potential to be a gold glove caliber shortstop. And the value, the premium that is placed on defense at the big league level just cannot be understated. And I understand he's in Greenville and there's a long way to go. But if you see some of the plays that he makes on a day-to-day basis, and I don't care – you can quote the error totals if you want. I really just don't care because a lot of the errors that he makes are on balls that he has no business getting to.
Yeah.
Or it's a thing where, you know, maybe he just, you know, he'll lose his concentration a little bit, but well, he just makes plays that are difficult, look very easy. Yeah. He's got the elite arm. And if you have someone who can play a gold glove caliber shortstop, if you hit it all, you're an extremely valuable player. If you hit, you know, if you have the potential like Guerra does to maybe hit, you know, 270 with 8 to 10, maybe 10 to 15 home runs a year, depending. I'm not sold. The power is a real thing. I understand he had 15 home runs this year, but he doesn't strike me as someone who that's going to continue. But even if he hits only 10 home runs a year, if he's hitting 270, you know, that is an extremely valuable player.
Sure.
And with the risks that are associated with a 17-year-old pitcher, you know, he already throws in the high 90s. There's just a lot can happen with a pitcher. So in a general rule, I like to favor the position player when it's those two are on similar talent level and upside. And then versus same thing with Guerra, Benintendi, just shortstop for me wins out over someone who I think Benintendi is a better hitter now and will be a better hitter at the big league level. But I still just don't know what to make of him. Like, is Benintendi someone who's going to be hitting, you know, 280 with 25 home runs, or is he more a 280 hitter with, you know, 15 home runs? I'm not really sure what he is in terms of that projection ultimately yet. So I think just the overall Guerra's got the complete package.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in that Benintendi is supposed to hit at the levels he's been at. And I think you make a good point with Guerra. And in fact, you convinced the rest of us to put Guerra back ahead of Johnson. And I think you were right on that in the long run. But I mean, let me give you a line here. 248, 299, 355. That's Andrelton Simmons the last 3 years. That's, you know, that's not a great hitter.
But
when you're Andrelton Simmons, you take it, you know, exactly. And I'm not saying that Guerra is going to necessarily be Simmons, but, you know.
I think that's very realistic. That line, the 260, what did I say? 270 with like 10 home runs.
I'm saying defensively. Defensively, he's not necessarily going to be Simmons because no one is, but, you know, he's got the potential to be a Gold Glove level shortstop perhaps. And you'll take that line from a guy if he's playing that level of defense is the point I'm making.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which is why he's a top trade chip for me too as well.
Yeah.
Because obviously Bogarts isn't going anywhere. So Guerra's value is probably at an all-time high. I know a lot of clubs are super high on him. So you could package him with like a Margot or something and pretty much get whoever you want.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me they've got this middle infield glut almost at that level, which might be, you know, if you strap a rocket to Moncada, it kind of helps with that. But you figure at that level you had Devers, Chavis, Guerra, and Moncada. Dubon was there for half a season, and Wendell Rijo's been in Salem. You know, that's a group of guys where you kind of almost have to alleviate a little bit of the pressure by trading one or two of them.
Well, and also, I mean, if we're saying, you know, you strap a rocket to Moncada, where's he going to play? They have a second baseman signed for 6 years. They have a third baseman signed for 5 years. So it's one of those things that the infield is pretty chalked full except for first base right now. And as we've mentioned before, first base, we're not sure the long term, you know, the future of first base and Red Sox necessarily in the organization. So with guys, you know, up the middle, they're pretty well set there at the big league level with young talent, except second base with Pedroia, but he's not going anywhere. So, as you said, got to do something.
Yep, we'll see. And we could probably talk a little bit more about trade chips in a future podcast too. But Chaz, I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on kind of that middle group in the top 10 and how they shake down for you. Is it similar to Ian's thoughts or?
We're looking at the middle, of the top 10.
Yeah. So kind of that Owens through Johnson group there. That seems to be really the most interesting ranking conundrum for me right now, because to me, you know, you get to the teens and it's just kind of,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, I guess
what do you like?
I guess it depends if you favor ceiling or floor. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Espinoza has a way higher ceiling than someone like an Owens. I think then you guys have Johnson ahead of Owens prior to Johnson's injury.
I didn't agree with it, but yes.
Yeah, and I like Johnson better than Owens. I think Johnson probably has a lower or a higher floor, mm-hmm. but I think he's just more polished, more advanced than Owens overall. But yeah, you could pretty much rank these guys 5 through 10 anyway and make a case for it. With Benintendi, too, it's encouraging that he's hitting and hitting for power. Obviously, everyone expected him to hit, like you guys were saying, he's a number 7 picking the draft, a top college bat, but I mean, people were saying he doesn't have any experience with wooden bats, so if he didn't hit, it would have been a very easy excuse to say, oh, he's adjusting to wooden bats, but he's come right out of the gate hitting for power. The only thing that I've noticed with Benintendi is he seems pretty pull heavy, and he's just kind of pulling everything. It'll be interesting to see how that plays at the higher levels. He's going to probably have to learn to start going the other way, but he does have a good advanced plate approach. Sees the ball well, knows balls from strikes, knows the strike zone pretty well, but he's pretty pull heavy right now. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's still interesting that in Greenville, after getting promoted, and again, this is probably a level he should be hitting at, but even in a 19-game sample, 351, 430, 581 with 4 home runs in 19 games is nothing to shake a stick at. It's encouraging. Certainly better than what their last number 7 pick did overall out of the gates, but it's a much different profile as well. It's not the project. This is the collegiate player of the year. It's what he's supposed to do.
And I will say that everyone, we've seen a lot of, I've talked to a lot of the amateur people about Benintendi, and everyone raved about him. I mean, he was someone who a lot of teams were really into. So I don't think it's not necessarily that surprising, as you said, that he's just killing the ball, because a lot of teams, this is kind of, they thought he was going to come in and just hit.
Do you think there's any chance he starts in Portland next year?
I think it's possible.
I'd say like 50-50.
I don't think it's going to happen. I think Travis is probably the best, timeline-wise. That's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Sam Travis kind of go to Salem, hit for 200 at-bats half a season, then you get promoted. But I think he could handle it for sure. He doesn't, as Chaz said, he is a little pull-happy. And in BP, I even noticed that all his power was to right field. But he just doesn't – he's not really being challenged in – like in Lowell especially, he wasn't being challenged. Kind of just would get ahead in the count and just try to hit a home run. Yeah. And it seems like in – you know, with what it's doing – with what he's doing in Greenville right now, obviously the caveat, we haven't seen him live, but it doesn't look like he's being challenged at that level either. So
No, because it's home runs. It's not like balls are falling – singles are falling in. He's hitting for power.
Now, what's his slugging? Oh, I was trying to think.
580, what did I say it was?
581, so his ISO is 230. I mean,
yeah,
he's just – and it's the same thing. It's more walks than strikeouts, just a very mature approach. And with guys like that, you know, sometimes it takes getting into the upper minors where, you know, you have guys you can spin a breaking ball, throw a good changeup, and have, you know, are in the low 90s before they're going to be challenged. Because when he's even in Salem, he's still – I mean, as we know from this, looking at the Salem Red Sox pitching staff, you're going to be facing a lot of guys with warts that aren't necessarily anything more, you know, or never, but probably a handful of them won't even get out of Double-A. He needs to start seeing that more advanced pitching. Kind of, you know, give him a test.
Yeah. I'll just really quickly run down the rest of the top 20. 11 was Devin Marrero again. Travis Shaw up two spots to 12 with a pretty good stint in Boston. I'm still not convinced he's more than a bench bat. I don't think he's the answer at first base. And in fact, he's kind of starting to come down already. Someone had the stat the other day that he's really already starting to come back to earth a little bit, but it does at least seem like he's a major league bat of some sort. Michael Chavis held steady at 13, and he's actually starting to hit for a lot more power. I could pull up his power numbers in a little bit here. But he's definitely starting to turn that batting practice power that he and I had talked about on a past episode of the podcast when we saw him down in Greenville and put it into play into games. In fact, yeah, here we go. In August and September, he had 6 home runs in 28 games. And for the season, he had 16 in 108. So since August 2nd, he's only hitting .226, but it's, like I said, 6 home runs. He's slugging .478, so getting there. We're seeing signs from him. Trey Ball falls 2 spots to number 14 from 12. Kind of a man, not great end of the season for him in Salem. I could see him repeating the level next year. We bumped Nick Longhi up 4 from 19 to 15, but this could just be kind of how we felt about guys after thinking about them more at that point in time. I don't know if it necessarily signifies anything. Mauricio Dubon up from 17 to 16. And actually, we flipped Dubon and Riho. I would put Riho above Dubon myself. But, when we do our season end, we'll probably maybe concentrate a little bit more on guys relative to each other. Teddy Stankiewicz at 18, up from 20. Marco Hernandez actually dropped from 18 to 19. He scuffled a little bit at the end of the season, despite the fact that you guys got a good outing from him today. And he actually wound up playing a lot of second base, which is good for his versatility, sharing an infield with Dev Marrero in the month of August. Pat Light dropped from 15 to 20. He really had some struggles in the closer's role for Pawtucket, kind of lost his control a little bit in a way that we'd like to see him maybe correct next year if he's going to reach that ceiling of his as a potential maybe closer or at least late inning arm in the majors. So that's the top 20. Ty Buttrey held steady at 21. We should probably throw him in there. Big movers for the rest of the rankings. Logan Allen, who we mentioned, is up to 22 from being 28 last month and being 35 the month before. Luis Alexander Basabe was up from 30 to 23. And again, he was at 51 in the July 1st ranking. Other guys that really we saw moving a lot, there really aren't too many. Some guys moving just because of guys moving around them. Frankly, Garrett Cicchini dropped again to 32. Really just, you know, he is what he is at this point. He's a hit first guy who's not hitting.
I'll just say that you mentioned that Pete Abraham piece earlier about call-ups. Cicchini wasn't mentioned there.
No.
And he's on the 40-man. And if he's not getting called up, I think that's a pretty ominous sign, as we saw with Alex Hassan last year, who – yeah. was obviously on the 40-man, didn't get called up, and then was
the only guy on the 40-man who didn't get called up, in fact.
Yeah.
Honestly, not a whole lot there. We had a debut of Austin Glorious at number 41. We talked about Glorious in the last episode of the podcast, so if you want to hear more on him, go check that out. Also debuting was Roniel Raudes. He is from, I believe, Nicaragua, right? He was another one of the guys that got... No, he didn't get promoted, did he? Did he get promoted to LOL? Remind me.
No, he didn't.
He did not get promoted to LOL. Okay, well, he was probably near the end of his innings limit anyway. Began, yeah, he's from Granada in Nicaragua, right-hander who got promoted from the Dominican Summer League after dominating down there. Had a great month of August in the Gulf Coast League and finished strong, so he definitely was a pretty clear sort of breakout guy at the tail end of the season. I think that's about it in terms of big news in the back half of the rankings. There really wasn't a whole lot to talk about. Jeremy Rivera was ranked for the first time at number 59, and Jorge Marban was ranked for the first time, Pawtucket reliever, Lowell shortstop and Pawtucket reliever, respectively, ranked for the first time at 59 and 60. But that is about it, honestly. There wasn't a whole lot noteworthy in the back half of things. So, yeah, anything stick out to you guys, or should we just shut it down and throw to our interview?
I'm good.
All right, cool. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we're going to throw to our interview now that I did with Wendell Rijo in Potomac in Woodbridge, Virginia, this past weekend. I want to thank Wendell for talking. I want to thank Kevin Burke from the Salem Red Sox for setting that up. Although I do want to say really quick, before we finish this one up, happy trails to a few key guys in the Red Sox farm system. We've been around for a while. Lou Schweckheimer, the vice president and general manager of the Pawtucket Red Sox, is apparently moving on. He's going to be part of a group, apparently, that's going to, I believe, buy the New Orleans Zephyrs, the AAA team, and he's going to be running that. And there was also a note in an article about him that I'd read in the Projo that he might be involved with buying a team that is currently owned by Cal Ripken, and I believe that would be the Aberdeen Ironburns Birds of the New York Penn League. So that's good luck to him. He's done a great job in Pawtucket as part of that original Ben Mondor crew that really made that team one of the model franchises in baseball. And also a couple in Lowell, I think on behalf of these guys, I know I speak for them too, when I wish John Boswell the best, who's moving on from working with the Lowell Spinners. He's been a true friend of the website, helping us out in both a media relations and perspective and on any number of issues. So we really appreciate him for all of his help over the years and for being a great guy, a nice friend. It's been great to see him at the ballpark. He's been a great guy to work with, and we wish him the best in his new job. And of course, we'd be remiss not to mention the retirement of Del the Dog Man. I don't know if you knew about this one, Ian, or not, but Del the Dog Man is moving on. He's the clubby in Lowell, but he's kind of a legend. If you've been going to Lowell Spinners games for a while or had gone a few years ago, you might remember him as the guy that would sell hot dogs and bark "Who Let the Dogs Out" for the entirety of the game. He's just a real character. I actually talked with Teddy Stankwitz briefly about it on Saturday, and he called him a legend. He's a guy that will be missed in the system. So we're probably missing others, but maybe we'll get to those next time. We'll probably do a season wrap-up show next time. So unless anything else, you guys, or should we throw it? I think we're good. I think I literally just asked that. So for Chaz and for Ian, thank you guys for joining me. I'm Chris, and here's my interview with Wendell Rijo, second baseman for the Salem Red Sox.
We're here at Woodbridge, I guess it's Fitzer Stadium, talking with Wendell Rijo. First off, I guess I should say, Feliz cumpleaños, happy birthday.
Thank you
friends.
So much, Chaz. Thank you.
Turned 20 yesterday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys do anything to celebrate?
Yeah, we just hear a couple Spanish music in the clubhouse, fun after a good win.
Yeah.
Just, go to a restaurant, get a good dinner.
Okay, well, what restaurant? What is nearby?
We get Applebee's. We get there. And then,
gotta hit Club Applebee's after the game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, definitely happy birthday. And this has been a good close to the year, too. You've been hitting very well recently, picking it up a little as the year has gone on. As this year has gone on at the plate, what have you been doing to feel more comfortable in the box? Is it just a matter of getting used to the level? what has changed for you in 2015 hitting?
Well, it's in the beginning, it's a little bit different to the Greenville. It's not the same league, you know. A lot of guys throwing different pitches that I ever seen, like sinkers and two-seamer. Those pitches are pretty filthy. So I'm trying to dry those pitches and trying to work to get a good pitch to swing, get it bar in front. You know, those things can help you with those kind of tough pitch to hit, you know.
Yeah.
So we keep working.
Yeah. As far as the difference from Greenville to here, would you say it's a bigger difference than you had going from the Gulf Coast League in Lowell to Greenville last year, or is it about the same sort of difference where each year they're getting a little bit better?
I think it's have a little bit difference.
Yeah.
Yes, this level you can skip it, man. This level is pretty tough to hit. So you gotta find a way to put the ball in play. You know, the mind playing a lot with you. You have to get your mind right always. You know, if you got good help, you can do it better, you know. You can keep going.
You've always been one of the younger players on the teams you've been on. In fact, I looked, you'd be one of the youngest players in Greenville right now if you were there. Facing older pitchers, has that, I mean, I guess if that's all you've known since you've been professional, that's all you're used to, but do you know how much, does it feel different playing against older players, or is it just kind of what you do at this point?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I just saying always, like my father and me always say, it's the same baseball. We have a pitcher in front of you. You just got to swing and see the ball and hit the ball. That's all I think. Then when you get out, you're back to 20-year-old. But in the field, everybody have the same age. Everybody's a man, play the same way.
Good way to look at it. I wanted to ask you about your father, Rafael. He's a scout for the Dodgers, right? Or at least he was.
He's not a scout anymore.
Not anymore. He was with just the Dodgers, or did he work for...
Now he's working with the White Sox.
Okay.
He's an instructor there. He is his outfield coach and hitting coach there.
Interesting.
He's helping the guys in the summer league over there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So obviously with the father who worked in the game, did you play baseball your whole life? Is pretty much?
As soon as I grew up, man.
Really?
All I see is baseball around me. So I'm pretty excited to get this level and keep playing the game that I love, man.
At what point for you did you know, in a realistic sense, that you were going to play baseball professionally? Was there a point where you realized, hey, I'm actually pretty good at this?
You know, I just, since like when I was like 14, I was playing for fun.
Yep.
All those years. So when I get 15, I say, okay, this is getting real. Then I start work harder with my father and my coaches in Dominican. So I keep working. Then I see the results coming every day.
And right around then would be 15, 16 or so would be when you had your knee injury, right? How did that happen? And you know, at the time, I mean, the timing certainly wasn't great.
No, it was tough, you know. Those months, you can even see the ball, you can touch it, you know, you can move like the way you always do it. So it was tough, you know. I just get my sign and I can, like, feel it, that I have it, you know. I trying to get the ground balls that I can do it. I can trying to hit BP, but you can do it either. So I feel bad in those days because all my teammates are in the field and just stay in the training room and see them play.
Yep.
So it was tough, but I'm glad I get out of that. That made my mind stronger.
Really.
And I, you know, I'm glad I'm here again. I'm glad I feel healthy.
How long did it take before you felt all the way back? Because I know in the Gulf Coast League you had that really big knee brace on. How long did it take before you really felt like you could move again, before you had all of your speed back, because you're very fast?
Yeah.
How long? Was it a year? Was it more? Less? Was it just a matter of getting healthy again, getting in shape again?
As soon as I start playing, you know, I feel weird playing with that knee brace.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that history. I get a double, and I trying to get third, and playing in sprint training versus the race.
Okay.
And I try to slide with the same brace in my left knee. I try to slide that way, that side.
Mm-hmm.
Then I kind of twist, but just the brace. My knee is still like intact.
That's this year?
Yeah. No, that was my
first sprint training.
Okay. Yes.
Okay.
So that day I knew I gotta think about it to slide the other side, learn that, and then, you know, I just get it. Just think about it, and I knew it like after a year, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah.
That I will be fine. I don't have to be scared.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing the same way I always do it. You know, good, man.
Yeah.
I feel pretty good.
One thing that it's interesting, we do these interviews, and just because, especially at the lower levels with language barriers, I tend to interview more U.S.-born players. I ask about the draft and things like that. Mm-hmm. What I'm wondering about is if coming from either the Dominican, in your case, or you see players coming from Venezuela, Honduras,
international.
All these international players. What's the toughest part of getting used to playing in the United States when you come over? Is it just the language barrier, or is it just getting used to the daily routine? What was the toughest transition for you?
I go with the language, man.
Really?
That's the tougher. The food. It's not the same you always see.
How is it different? Because I've heard it's sweeter in the U.S., mm-hmm. the food. Is that
you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
A couple of foods with you guys have here, mm-hmm. you know. But the only difference, we eat a lot of rice, a lot of
beans
a lot of chicken, all those. You guys had it, but not that much.
Okay.
You know.
Sure.
And the way they cook it is maybe different here.
Yeah.
You know, but still good, yeah. And you get like comfy with all that.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you have like 2-3 years, you get comfortable with all those kind of mm-hmm. stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm. At the plate, obviously, you, at least in my observations, maybe you don't feel like it's unique, but your stance and your mechanics at the plate, you start very open, and you've certainly tweaked some things over the years, but where did you learn how to have that open stance where you come in to close it, and what have you worked on since you've been in the system on your swing at the plate?
You know, I always try to hit like open like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, since I was doing the tryouts, I don't know if you see some videos I have.
Mm-hmm.
I was, you know, hitting like that, not that far that I was that I'm right now. I'm not right now. I'm working to be like more closer to the plate,
more straight.
You know, straight. Mm-hmm. You see, I don't know if you see it, because the leg kick that I have,
you have a big leg kick.
It's big.
Yeah.
And then if you're gonna go back and then trying to put it straight to the pitcher, it's pretty tough.
It is.
It's, you know, those fastball outs pretty hard, and you have to make adjustment. You
know, it's funny because the first time I saw you play was in the Gulf Coast League, mm-hmm. and it was against Hunter Harvey. Who's a stud? He's good, and I'm just looking. And it was, you know, you've got this big stride, and I mean, he was making everybody look mm-hmm. bad that day because he's Hunter Harvey. But it was just kind of, it was interesting. You were getting it down, and I've seen you even this year. You're able to get your foot down and get to the ball, but it's like you say, it's tough to with a big leg kick get the timing right. But you're sticking with it, I'm guessing, in terms of the big leg kick for now, right?
Yeah,
it's working for you.
Yeah, as soon as it's working, mm-hmm. you just keep doing what you've been doing, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
I think I can control that, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe I don't have to go like that far that I'm going, you know. I'm working on it.
Yep.
I keep working, you know. All this is for get to the biggest and be ready for that, you know.
Yep.
I know it's gonna be tough to swing like that, but
mm-hmm.
I'm working on it, you know.
Yeah.
That's all we can do.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the other side of the ball. You were a shortstop when you signed, but since then you've played second base. Did that transition, was that easy for you because it's the middle of the diamond, or was there obviously maybe a little shorter throw, but what was different about that, and how was that transition?
Well, it's pretty similar, you know.
Yeah.
I love to play shortstop, but as soon as they take me to the second base, I was, you know, taking ground balls every day, and then I get like comfortable in that position.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty nice. I not right now, I'm loving the second base. Before it was the shortstop, but now that's my base, man. I love playing there. if one day they need me in another position, I'll be available to play.
Well, you played shortstop four times in the second half, I noticed. Is it nice to
Oh, it was awesome. And I was talking with the guys that I would love to play there too.
Yeah.
It's pretty nice, man. It's fun to play there. It's a big part of the field. You know, you feel like a captain over there.
Yeah,
I like that. I like that position.
Waiting a second as the paint guy goes by. All right, in the second half, at least, looking at the numbers, it seems like your errors have gone down. You've only got, like, two in your last 60-something games. Have you been working on anything to improve in the field where that has caused the numbers to go down, or is it just a matter of getting the reps and the plays are getting made? Is it,
you know, this career is pretty tough. This season is a long season. Sometimes your numbers, you see it's going down. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's going up.
Yeah.
You know, it's a routine you have to do every day to try to get better. Mm-hmm. If the thing's not going the way that you want, sometimes that's going to happen. This is a long season.
Sure.
140 games, that's going to happen. You're a human, you know. Mm-hmm. So I just try to get my mind right every day, and my teammates and the coaches trying to help me in that. Mm-hmm. And the good thing's gonna happen, but about time. God give you the time, and then you can make the adjustment, man.
Yeah. How about off the field? What do you like to do off the field when you're not at the park, when you're not working on your game? What do you do in your spare time?
Video games.
What do you play?
I like to play the show, baseball. Okay. I like to play 2K, NBA.
Those
sports games and Mario, whatever game that you give me, I will play with you.
What system do you have right now?
Right now I have PS3
PS3, okay.
Yeah.
Still hanging in there with me with the PS3.
Yeah, I have
the
PS3. I have too many games to sell it or something.
Okay.
So I like that game, and sometimes I just take the day to talk with the guys.
Yeah.
Try to get like teammates, you know, my teammates, I try to talk with them about the games and those things, you know. They are like a family, you know, 7 months with them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you're trying to be the more close you can.
Well, I heard you got voted most talkative or something right? Is that true?
It is. I think it is, because I'm trying to work in my English.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying to talk with everybody, you know. I try to talk with them, with the Americans, trying to work in my English. They help me sometimes. Mm-hmm. If I'm saying something wrong, mm-hmm. and I feel pretty good with that. I don't care. I don't mind. Yeah.
I'm curious about your shirt. It looks like it's from the Sox, but I can't tell. What does the MD stand for?
This is Mauricio Dubon.
Oh,
I was wondering. Shirt. Yeah.
Why does he have his own shirt?
I don't know, man. He just gave it to me and told me, "Hey, use it, and I will use it." I don't care.
Is it working for you? Is it?
I don't know. He's. I don't know. I
right,
just like.
It's got the little smiley face underneath.
It looks like him. Bro.
It does. It's
I
very
just love it.
Like
love his shirt.
Nice. Yeah. All right. I was wondering about that.
Yeah.
Last question. We like to ask guys. Since you've been in the system, what teammate or teammates that you've had have impressed you the most?
What teammate?
Bro. You've been in the system for about 3.5 years now. Mm-hmm.
This year or all the years I'm here?
Either or.
I go with this year.
Okay.
Franklin Guzman, man.
Okay.
Those games, he don't been playing those many games. He had like 100 something at bats.
Yeah.
He already has 7 homers.
I heard
he's leading the team with 7 homers. That's why. For me, it's pretty impressive, you know.
Kevin was telling me he destroyed a couple yesterday.
Oh, yeah. Guzman is amazing. That power, man, is awesome.
Yeah.
He can run. He hustles on the field. Mm-hmm. He died for the balls.
Yeah.
I think I have a couple guys, you know, but special.
Yeah.
Guzman for me.
Interesting.
It's pretty special, man,
cool.
Right now.
This offseason, will you be playing with Este, or do you know what you're going to be doing during the winter? You gonna play for the Toros or?
I don't know yet. They gonna let me know if I will play there. But I wanna be in the practice with the team.
Yep.
So I will see if they give me the chance and the Red Sox give me the chance to play.
Because who else? I know Margot is there as well. I think too. Mm-hmm, right. Mm-hmm. He was drafted with you last
him.
Year. Yeah.
Yes. He was the first one. I was the second one.
Yep.
They picked so. I think I will be with Margot. Mercedes gonna be there.
Okay, yep.
Yeah, that's right. German and him.
Okay.
So we're gonna be there. Boston team there.
Boston South.
Yeah.
Boston
South.
Nice, man. Well, I'll let you go. I appreciate
Thank
the time
you so
very much.
Much. Thank you so much.
I usually say good luck with the rest of the season, but that's about 3 days.
Oh, yeah.
Good luck this weekend and have a great off season.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank
appreciate
you so much.
It.
Take care,
appreciate
Wendell.
It.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.